Hi, this is David Smalley from Dogma Debate, and I took a left at the valley.
I know we shouldn't have to scream that we're atheists. You know, we don't have non-astrologers and all that. But with religious people taking over the world, I mean, we can either speak up or be pushed into a corner.
I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen. I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance, and you just call it faith in unsubstantiated claims. That's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist.
Coming at you from rarely sunny Abbotsford, BC, this is Left at the Valley. My name is Kevin, and if you can't hear me, it's because I'm in parentheses. Joining me as usual is the team that figured out you never really learn to swear until you learn to drive. She bought some batteries, but they weren't included. Nancy.
Uh-oh. Without batteries, I'm just lifeless sitting here.
She wonders why phonetically isn't spelled with an F, Teresa.
Of course.
I thought it was.
And he wonders that if you use a pricing gun in a robbery, is it really theft? Scott.
It is. Wait a minute.
Just reduce bargain.
Somebody just used a water gun in a theft and they called it theft.
This wasn't meant to be taking liberty, bud. Guys, welcome back.
He's sick.
Hope you guys had a good week.
Oh, yeah. Always have a good week one way or the other.
Yeah.
And we have this to look forward to. What could go wrong?
We had this wonderful sun come out last week, and this week it disappeared again.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there.
The rain caught up with us.
So today we're going to have a great show. We're going to be talking to our old friend, Dr. Del Rey. He is a psychologist in human sexuality. He's going to be talking to us about recovery from religion and all the great work they're doing, and also about hypnotism in church. But first, a little bit of chit-chat. Did you guys hear that Manuel Noriega died?
Who did?
Manuel Noriega.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I didn't read that.
Yeah, the Panamanian politician. He was the dictator of Panama from 83 to 89. He was also a major CIA source and a coke trafficker. He was captured by the U.S. during the invasion of Panama, is sentenced to 40 years, and died this week at the hospital of Santo Tomas on the 29th.
Didn't he resist being arrested by the U.S. military, and they surrounded his house or whatever it was, and played this music day in and day out.
They played
to
rock
get
music
him
for like 36 hours.
36 hours straight. And
this guy was obviously not a good dictator. He should have just thrown a party.
Yeah.
He had free DJ there.
And he was held for a long time.
Yeah, oh yes, he was. And then he was kind of released and transferred and then extradited to other countries to face other charges. So he finally died this past week.
There goes an era.
Yeah, page of history has just turned.
In dictators.
Okay. On the local level, the BC election. Now, it turns out when we last spoke, they just had the election, and the Liberals had won the majority, well, not a majority of the seat, but most of the seats. But now it turns out the Green and the NDP have decided to form an alliance. You guys have any thoughts about what's going to happen with this?
It's going to be a mess.
You think so, huh?
Oh, yeah, because Christie's already said she's not giving up without a fight.
So. Well, they're obviously going to have a vote of confidence into the in-house. And if they stick together, then she's going to lose.
One mistake on the Green Party's or the NDP's platform, mm-hmm. one mistake, and it's over. They lose.
Well, it could be on either way, right?
Yeah.
Even if the Greens had decided to support the Liberals, it would have been the same thing. Right, one mistake. So that'll be interesting. So it turns out that we'll probably see the NDP form government when they go and ask the lieutenant governor that they can form government while Christie cannot. So that'll be interesting to see. And also, we're gonna have to keep an eye on what this means about the Kinder Morgan pipeline.
That's very scary.
Because right now Alberta is trying to push a Kinder Morgan pipeline that comes all the way down here.
So is the federal government.
Yeah. So we'll see what the Green and the NDP alliance say about that.
That's a bad, bad move. Anything having to do with that pipeline is hopefully something will happen and it won't get built. But I'm not too hopeful.
Yeah, exactly. This week we had the movie Wonder Woman come out, and funny thing is this is a new version of Wonder Woman. We haven't seen a Wonder Woman thing since the 1970s. Lebanon. Lebanon banned Wonder Woman. They're boycotting Wonder Woman.
Well, I wonder if it's because of the costumes.
It's actually because the Gal Gadot, who actually plays Wonder Woman, the actress, is Israeli.
She's Israeli.
Yes, and Lebanon and Israel have a long history of not liking each other so much.
I mean, they've got their choice of reasons to ban it, for sure.
Yeah, they've been boycotting Israeli products for some time now.
Can't they just grow up?
Apparently they can't. No. So they've been banning Israeli products for a while now, and I guess she's an Israeli product in some sense, right? So they're banning...
Yeah, I haven't seen anything about this movie yet. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, actually, I saw it last night.
It's Wonder Woman, from a guy's point of view. I remember the 1970s.
It was a good movie. Good. It was a good movie.
It was good.
She was like 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Well, this is totally different. In, I gather, in terms of her, the personal force that she portrays, you know, it's not all kid cartoon stuff, which was what the original was. This really, you know, packs a punch.
Oh, yeah. she
morally and physically as well. And I was reading that if for no other reason, people have to go to the movie to be activist because of the director, who happens to be a black woman.
Oh, I did not know that.
And this is the first major film directed by a woman of color, and because Hollywood has always been really sort of a good old boys club, with a few exceptions in terms of acting. There have not been. I'm trying to think. I think she may be the first. I know she's not the first director to do action movies, because there is another woman director that did that movie about Vietnam that won awards. But
Rafaela De Laurentiis.
I think
the wife of Dino De Laurentiis. Right?
We'll have to check. But she definitely is the first woman of color. There's been men of color who have directed, but not a woman.
I think they, like Kevin said, the Rotten Tomatoes rating right now at 94%, that's a pretty good indication of how that movie is.
Yeah, and good on for the DC Universe to put a good movie, because their last couple of movies have not been very good. Yeah.
So this might be a real redeeming thing. For her, it's going to be a real feather in her cap.
I mean,
to be the director of that.
Oh, she totally kicks ass in that movie, too, so it's cool. Did you guys hear about this Kathy Griffin photo debacle?
Oh.
No.
Where have you been? Under a rock?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, besides
Scott, it was a nice rock.
Kathy Griffin, which is the comedian / actress, took a picture. She posed with what looked like Trump's bloody severed head. She did this with celebrity photographer.
Damn. Yes, I seen it.
Yeah, she did this with celebrity photographer Tyler Shields. No, it wasn't real.
But
there's this little clip where she just stares at the camera. She's got that really blank look, and she just raises the head, the severed head, which is obviously the head of Donald Trump, and all bloody and all that. And that just, you know, the tweet hit the shitstorm. You know, the
fans are
like, oh my God.
Wouldn't that be actually like some kind of crime?
Well, it turns out the Secret Service are going to investigate into it.
I'm thinking they would.
I mean, she was kind of making some kind of political statement, I guess, and she's been on the receiving end of bipartisan side on a lot of people are just, you know,
bashing
her.
Immediately.
That went way over the edge.
Yes.
She did. I guess, you know, she's an edgy comedian.
She is
anyway,
an edgy
she's
comedian.
Made her career out of being edgy, and for some reason or another, either her judgment or the judgment of those around her didn't kick in to say, wait a minute, this is just a little more than most people are going to be able to tolerate. And it's terrible for her, because a career that was peaking, you know, and she was doing extremely well, it's just come to a screeching halt.
She was fired by CNN right after that.
Yeah.
And
gee, I wonder why.
But, you know, at the same time, I can't help but think, you know, of course, everybody that was conservative made a huge stink about this, but if you recall, just a few years ago, where were all these people when they were depicting pictures of Obama being hung?
Ah, good point.
And, you know,
that's
burning the
point.
You know, I mean, okay, fine. I personally think she what she should have done, she would have made that same political statement instead of a bloody head. If she had like a cartoonish kind of head, I think she would have made the same kind of statement. But I think the fact that it looked too much like a bloody head right out of ISIS thing or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that was the straw.
Well, that's going over the line. Had she done the same thing and put Trump effigy on a noose?
Yes.
Okay, fair. That's fair ball. But to actually hold up a bloody head, I mean.
So I'm not exactly sure how I feel about that myself.
I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, I support anybody in their in the right to peacefully protest. Mm-hmm. It was a peaceful thing, but the icon itself has a lot of negative emotional yes. impact. So.
Well, we can agree in the meantime that the politics have become all too polarizing. When something like that creates such a kerfuffle, and at the same time, you know, I understand why people do make a fuss about this, because you don't want these kind of images to become the norm either. You don't want people to be desensitized to an image like that. So I understand that. So I'm on the fence on this. I'm really on the fence. I thought it was a very interesting comment by Jim Carrey, who came kind of to her defense, saying, you know, it's a comedian's job to be on the edge. So. We'll have to follow that.
There's on the edge, and then there's over the cliff.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you can't help but pair that image with ISIS beheadings,
yes.
and it just the whole thing, unfortunately, became negative.
Would it have been different if she had been wearing like an ISIS mask? You know, how would people have reacted then?
No, I think it was the separate, regardless of what she wore. Yeah. I think it was the head itself.
You know, those subtle things, right? Yeah. And speaking of severed boobs, the Paris Accord.
Oh.
Severed boobs, okay.
Yeah, turns out Mr. Trump has decided not to go ahead with the Paris Accord, while all the other countries in the world, except for Syria, which we could totally understand because they're at war, and Nicaragua. And Nicaragua didn't sign the Paris Accord because it didn't go far enough. But the U.S. decided to say, no, you know what? We're not signing this. Who cares about the planet? As Donald Trump said, I represent the people of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
You know, you think the U.S., you know, in 1776, when they declared independence, it's been a democratic nation since then. It's taken 132 years, and the whole government is poised on chaos mm-hmm. at this particular time. It's working. But you think one guy, after all this time, has put everything that the United States has worked for in jeopardy.
In barely over 100 days.
Bare 130, I think it's 130 and 32 days. I mean, the good thing about it is there are checks and balances, and I think eventually it will work. It's going to take a while to work, and at this point, there's no telling day to day how much damage he can actually do out front and how much the Republicans are doing in secret, using his outrageous behavior as a shield, and they're doing things in the background that are just as damaging. We just aren't hearing about them.
And of course, what will be the breaking point for the U.S., for the average citizen? Because at this point, they've been pretty much, you know, complaining, but going along with it nonetheless. At some point, I think the Americans are going to turn around and say, okay, enough is enough, and then you're going to see chaos in the streets.
Yeah.
I hope not either.
I don't think there'll be chaos in the streets. I think I was watching the other day that his approval rating as a candidate and his approval rating as president has stayed about the same, between 35% and 41%. And it's going to take about 10% of that core group to move over to the other side to mm-hmm. actually start making it. Or it's going to take the Republicans to get a collective backbone and do something about it.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah.
And of course, in the meantime, there's a lot of the American cities have decided to keep on fighting climate change and to respect the Paris Accord on their own.
The cities themselves.
The cities themselves, independently, good. You know, have decided to do that.
And Bloomberg says he'll give $15 million to keep going.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I didn't hear that.
Yep.
The interesting part about this is a great opportunity for China. With every step the U.S. decides to take out and not be part of, China steps in, and they are looking better and better yep. and better. So this power vacuum, I guess you could say, has been very beneficial for China at this point. So Who knows? We might come to a point where we'll see that the global power is no longer going to be the U.S. It might be China. It might be coming sooner than we think. And, of course, you know, to finish on a bit of a better note, remember An Inconvenient Truth with Al Gore?
Love that movie.
The second one is coming out this July. July 28th. Yay! So that should be interesting because apparently the first one, we weren't smart enough to listen to that first message. You need a second one, apparently. So that'll be interesting to
Timing
see.
Timing is good.
Yes.
Because you've got a lot of resistance movements going on. So
exactly.
We'll see what happens. I mean, with the accord, with the pulling out of the accord and now the movie, we'll have to see.
We'll have to see.
Maybe it'll help make a change.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so.
All right. So what are we doing today? Are we doing a distant history or doing a quack watch?
We're doing a quack watch.
Let's do a quack watch.
All righty.
I love your quack watches.
I like the intro.
This is a fun one. I was relaxing during the week, and a friend of mine sent me a message that had to do with Dr. Oz and a website. And she sent it to me very innocently and said, "Do you know about this?" And I thought, do I know about this? I'm the crack investigator reporter for a top-rated podcast. Am I
That's
on
right.
this or what? You know.
That's right.
So, you know, I took my little clicker and went to work, and it was fun. It really was. The website that she sent me, I had to do with Dr. Oz, and the there was something off about that website, and I couldn't figure out at first what it was, but it was a website that said The Doctors, which was, you know, one of the sites, I think, that he's used. And Dr. Oz was interviewing a young lady named Ashley Williams about a new weight loss supplement made of a, well, I'll get into that because at this point it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference what it was. But Ashley Williams is sitting and she's giving this whole spiel about how her life totally changed and she got a sample and she lost 187 zillion pounds in 2 days. I mean, you know, we all know the pitch. But I noticed that I couldn't navigate that site. And I thought, well, at first, maybe it's me. And I'm clicking and clicking and nothing is moving. But I can read the whole thing and I can absolutely click on the jar of the supplement in order to get that, but not anything on the dashboard. So I became intrigued with Ashley Williams and wondered, who is this person that got on Dr. Oz? So I clicked on Ashley Williams, and it took me to another site that was exactly the same, only it said Dr. Oz show. And every time I clicked on that dashboard, it brought up the picture of the supplement, but it was an entirely different supplement. So now I had two websites with the same product, but different brand names. So now I really got intrigued about Ashley Williams and wondered, how the heck did this happen? Or, you know, I knew how it happened. They're just, you know, whatever the interview was, they just decided to co-opt it and use it for a different brand. So I looked up Ashley Williams and went a little further and found an Australian site where Ashley Williams was giving an interview with an Australian host about and saying how wonderful it was that she lost all this weight from gastric band surgery.
Oh
my God.
And I'm going, this is just wild, you know. So what, with the same pictures of the before and after. So obviously, I don't say obviously, but somehow this particular interview with this particular woman and the pictures has been used as the basis of a lot of these fake weight loss.
So she was fat, and she got bypass surgery.
Right.
And she lost all the weight, and now she's here in the U.S. saying, well, it wasn't the bypass surgery. It was essentially this supplement for $29.99.
Either that, or they used the Australian one. Yeah. Somehow or another, that interview was used and changed to promote weight loss. In one sense, in Australia, it was used for gastric band, but here it was used for two different products that had the same, pretty much the same ingredients in them. So freaking now I'm having a good time and I'm really intrigued. So I look at the either the Dr. Oz or the doctors to read about each of the supplements. One was called Trim Gen X and the other is called All Pure Life. Mm-hmm. And they all cite, both of them cited the same results of what was supposedly a study done by Columbia University obesity research study that showed that the full name of it was Pure Life Garcinia, and it's Garcinia that I'm going to talk about in a little bit, but I still want to go through the fake sites.
Isn't it an actor? Andy Garcinia?
Andy Garcinia, sorry. Yes, he could be. I like the name. It's a good name for a dog. Here, Garcinia. I like that one, too. Anyway, they both had this supposed study by Columbia University Obesity Research Center showing that the Garcinia was just fabulous in helping with weight loss, and it was a double blind and so forth. But as it turned out, when I went to research the study itself showed that there was no significant difference. So they took a study and then lied about the results. And it was not an easy study to find because there actually isn't any Columbia University Obesity Research Center. There is a center at Columbia, but it has slightly different name and it's attached to the surgery center. So
you really went to town on this.
I went to town because once I found that they were fake, then I had to search. And most of the information was pretty easy to find. So let's get into what this is. This has to do with a fruit that's called Garcinia cambogia. Yeah. Has anybody heard of it?
I have. Seen it on there tons on Facebook.
The fruit that cures cancer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen that.
Yeah, supposedly it originally was used for diabetes and high cholesterol, but then whoever it was that made the decision to market it, marketed it for the weight loss. And there is some very, very tiny weight loss associated with it right at first, but there is no significant weight loss attached to it. It's all marketing at this point.
Of course there's going
to
be a weight loss if you're eating fruit instead of Slim Jims.
Bought it.
You bought it?
Yeah.
Did you buy it in the pill form?
Yeah.
What did it do?
Nothing.
Not much.
Did you have any side effects?
Yeah, I had to go to the bathroom a lot.
The side effects.
It's diuretic.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems with it. That it does have side effects that really can be annoying: dizziness, dry mouth, headache, upset stomach, diarrhea. This sounds like a Pepto-Bismol commercial. And it can interact with asthma, diabetes, iron, pain medications, and so forth. So how long did you take it?
I bought a special, so I got three bottles. I only took two of them.
Oh, so you lost all that money.
Yeah, and it is supposed to be, at this point, one of the hottest products out there.
It's a big seller.
It's a big seller. It's a tropical fruit, and other names for it are Malabar tamarind.
You can buy it at the health food stores in different forms of names that has the same similar ingredients in it.
Yeah, and the active ingredient is actually in the fruit rind, and it's called hydroxytric acid, or HCA.
Yeah.
And supposedly the HCA boosts the fat burning and cuts back appetite in various studies.
There's a whole bunch of weight loss products that have HCA, the hydroxycut, hydroxy whatever. They all have that.
Yeah, and it also raises levels of the brain's chemical serotonin, which makes people feel less was hungry. So it's one of these things that just makes the rounds and it'll hit a peak. So Consumer Reports. So now we know what it is, and we know that the fake websites are out there. So Consumer Reports in 2015 said that there were about 1 million Americans each month that use weight loss supplements, and so they all these people look for reviews on Garcinia Cambogia's effectiveness and the side effects and where they bought it. So the manufacturers claim that although it boosts weight loss by slowing the body's ability to absorb fat and replacing fat with toned muscles and so forth and so on, that it really doesn't work that well in people. It works much better in a petri dish, but not that well with people. So in 1998, when the first randomized control trial started, back then it didn't show that it was significant. So what the marketers have been doing is weaving a story with obscure facts, and maybe each fragment has some validity, but the whole thing has no sense at all. So let's get back to Dr. Oz.
No, please not.
Let's get back to Dr. Oz. So the interesting thing is, back in 2013 or 14, Dr. Oz actually promoted Garcinia.
Yes, he did.
And he was promoting that along with green coffee beans and other things, and
raspberry ketones.
And for his viewing of audience is predominantly women, mm-hmm. and they like Dr. Oz, and so this thing just took off. So in 2014, he called the Garcinia a miracle weight loss cure. Yeah. And he really promoted, he didn't promote a brand, but he promoted the whole thing. So interestingly enough, that claim that it was a miracle led to a Federal Trade Commission lawsuit against him in 2014, and he had to testify before a congressional committee. So he appeared before the congressional hearing for praising that, plus the green coffee and the raspberry ketones, so forth and so on. And Claire McCaskill, who was the chairman at that point, really scolded him for promoting all the magic pills. And so Oz said, yeah, his language was a little flowery about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just a little, huh?
But he felt, well, maybe they can be short-term crutches. So he kind of, you know, pulled back a little bit. So let's get to 2015. A group of 10 doctors sent a letter to Columbia University urging that Dr. Oz lose his facility, his faculty standing.
We talked about this on the show before.
Yeah, and because he's shown a disdain for science and for evidence-based medicine. So the university responded that it upheld Dr. Oz's right for freedom of expression and that he wouldn't be removed. Okay, so now let's get back up to 2016. One of the interesting things is that Dr. Oz recently went on a tirade against brands that were using his name without his permission. However, during all of this stuff, and there's a lawsuit against him now, there's a new one in 2016, and it's because of Garcinia Cambogia. So a consumer filed a class action suit on behalf of all purchases of the supplement, but it hasn't gone anywhere. It alleges that the diet pills are not based on any evidence, but they're presented. And they also say that the Dr. Oz effect has caused the rise in different products. So here all of this is going on, and Dr. Oz is trying to prove his credibility. The lawsuit is against him, and to cap the whole thing off, he's recently joined a multi-level marketing company that sells nutritional supplements very similar to the Garcinia Cambogia and the ones that are targeted in the lawsuit. And that company, everybody write this down, USANA which is described by some as a pyramid scheme. So that's the odyssey between my friend saying, have you heard about this, and the fact that Dr. Oz is up to his old tricks of pushing stuff where it's putting money in his pocket and taking it out of ours.
That's a brilliant bit of research, Nancy. Fantastic. Fantastic job. And I guess the lesson is, whenever you hear the word miracle, red flag should go up right away. I don't care who says it.
Well, if Dr. Oz says it, I think it should give you...
I have a strict personal policy. Anybody pushed by Oprah is a quack, as far as I'm concerned. So.
Yeah, they tend to spin off and make a lot of money credibility for some reason or another.
Whether it's Dr. Phil, Dr. Oz, wasn't there a third one too? They're all Oprah-esque, you know. Discovered by Oprah. They all go on their own show. They're all quacks.
But, people want to lose weight. They want to lose it quickly. They don't want to exercise. They don't want to do anything. And I can understand that. I can understand it. And what has a doctor's name attached to it, it helps. But the old-fashioned way, and if there's a medical problem that's interfering with weight loss, then you really have to go, and find out what the underlying causes are of the weight loss.
That involves seeing a real physician.
A real physician.
I can understand how people get duped by this, because Dr. Oz, for example, you would talk about the show The Doctors, right? Even right here in BC, in the paper, the province, there is a column by Dr. Oz and another doctor.
Yes.
Really? Yes.
Oh,
so, you're reading the local paper. The province is not great. I'll admit to that. But it's still one of the local papers, right? And you think you have journalism there, and there you have Dr. Oz in his column. I can understand how you get easily duped then, because it looks legit. But as far as the province is concerned, all they want is to put something that people will read and get them advertising revenue. That's all they care about. So.
Anyway,
it's all about the cash.
It's all about the cash. But I will tell you one thing for sure. The only sure way to lose weight is to have some of my cooking.
I'll try that.
That's a new old risk and peril. All right. Thank you so much, Nancy. But in the meantime, we shall go to our segment we all love called Another Brilliant Moment. Brought to you by Religion. Remember Billy Graham?
Oh, who could forget Billy Graham?
Yeah. Well, if you still have doubt that Christians are dominionists, theocracy alert, his son.
Franklin
Graham. Him and his Christians extremists plot to take over public school in the U.S. Franklin Graham, son of the legendary charlatan Billy Graham, says school districts are now controlled by wicked and evil gays and lesbians. And must be run by evangelical Christians if America is to avoid God's wrath.
And wasn't Betsy DeVos a gift for him?
Oh, jeez, sure was. I thought God's wrath was Donald Trump.
Oh. I mean, he really makes his father look mainstream. Mm. I mean, his father was respected. Religion, his father really was very respected and seemed to operate on an ethical base. And I don't know what happened to Franklin, but he sure fell off the wagon.
Show me the money.
Show me the money. Yeah.
So he says on Fox News that President Obama has sold himself completely to the gay and lesbian community. Telling Starnes on the Todd Starn last week Obama was pushing a dangerous policy that will allow sexually perverted people to take advantage of women.
You mean like Catholic priests?
No, not quite. And now states like North Carolina are facing pressure from a very wicked agenda within the Obama administration. The guy's been gone from office. They're still blaming him, right?
No, he's the prime target. I think, just to interject a second, I think that's what drives Trump. He's got to wipe everything Obama did totally off the map. It's irrational.
You're probably absolutely right.
Sorry about that.
So he says, quote, I want the school boards of America in the hands of evangelical Christians within the next 4 to 6 years. And that should be good for
wow.
So he's declaring that America is now facing a moral 9/11. The country is imploding. We're seeing a moral implosion. Just like we saw the World Trade Center on 9/11 when the planes hit the tower. They imploded, they fell from within. And that's what's happening in our country. We're falling within. Our foundations have been weakened by immorality and it's beginning to crumble.
Ah.
What do you say? But he has the president's ear.
At least we can sit on this side of the border and just watch it unfold.
I don't want to add, but it's actually getting worse, because adding fuel to the fire in a Facebook message to his followers, he said Graham encouraged Christians to martyr themselves to the Christian dream of theocracy, asking the rhetorical question, what would you take a bullet for? What are the principles and belief that you would not compromise under any circumstances, even if it meant putting your life on the line? This is getting scary.
It is.
Because also, we also know that...
I don't remember that. You know, I used to be a churchgoer long ago. I don't remember that message. I don't ever remember the theocracy being the dream of a Christian. Where did that come from?
Because you're in Canada.
Came from the rise of the evangelicals.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary thing going on there. So
yeah.
Let's do another one here, another brilliant moment. now, although it's a fact that a segment of the population is sexually oriented towards the same sex, we don't really know as to why until now. Zakir Naik, you guys know this guy?
Never heard of him.
He's a Muslim televangelist responsible for such gems as Darwin went to Calopteris Island instead of Galapagos. Scientists support evolution because it's against the church. And Homo sapiens, that's us by the way, went extinct 500,000 years ago.
Oh boy.
Oh, he's been in the news lately, and ever since it emerged that Muslim youth have been getting radicalized listening to his sermons on TV, and a few have gone to join ISIS as well. The Indian government is also investigating Zakir Naik, Islamic Research Foundation. Dr. Naik's sermons are often regressive and sometimes borders on hate speech for other communities. As expected of him, he views homosexuality as haram, which is means forbidden. In a video, the giant scholar of Muslim ignorance not only launches into a tirade against homosexuality, telling the Bible prescribes homosexual to be stoned to death, a practice as ISIS has been following in its territories, but also comes up with a new explanation for homosexuality. Okay, listen to this. Men become gay. Now, please prepare a Nobel Prize. At least some kind of drum roll. Somebody give me a drum roll. Because they start mingling freely with girls and have sex with 30 to 50 women and then get tired and want something different.
Oh God!
I know. I'm sorry. I'm gonna be crass here, but I'm so tired of all that pussy. I just can't. No, not anymore.
Really?
Man.
That's a theory I never heard before. You know who knew? You know who knew? Islam.
They get bored. They get bored of the women, so they migrate to the men.
That's right.
Wow.
Some men are too promiscuous, and that's why they decide. I'm tired with all these women coming at me.
I know. Somewhere in there, there's a kernel I could use to talk about feminism, but I can't quite pull. I know there's something there, but I can't quite pull it out at this particular point. Holy.
Yeah, because, you know, some ancient goat herders actually knew better about homosexuality.
Well, ancient goat herders knew that the goats were worth something anyway.
And, you know, I find it funny that in something like that, they never talk about lesbianism, right? They talk about gay men.
Yeah, it's gay men. That's the target.
But the religion is so man-centric that they completely forget a whole segment of a population.
Well, because they don't matter.
Women don't matter.
That's right.
Exactly. So, Dr. Naik, whatever his name is, this clown.
This is so sad.
It is sad.
It's sad because people are
viewed as a huge scholar in the Islamic world. He's viewed as a huge man.
The fact that we have to even discuss things like that, that we have these things to discuss in this day and age, is just sad.
Yeah, it absolutely is sad.
Well, we have to discuss it because we have to point out how ridiculous and harmful. Ridiculous and harmful don't belong together in the same sense.
I don't know, Nancy. That sounds very Islamophobic to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're Islamophobic.
But there's very little difference when you think about it between what he's saying and what the evangelical.
No, exactly.
Saying, the message is the same.
The message is the same.
That's the only thing that's bringing them together is their hatred of homosexuality and people who are different.
What is it that they hate? And this is what I don't understand. What is it that they hate about it? So I knew somebody who actually approached me. It was somebody I know. And they said, did you hear about, and it was down in the States with the washroom debacle, right? Where they were doing the trans couldn't use the washroom because, and I'm like, what difference does it make? And they said, well, they're gay. Now, they're religious, right? This person was religious. And I said, okay, so they're gay. What business is it of yours?
Yeah.
I don't care who they want to hold hands with walking down the street. I don't care what they do in their bedroom. I don't care who they want to sit on the park bench with. That's their business. Exactly. Get out of their business.
Exactly. I have a family member who was very homophobe. I don't know if he still is, but he certainly was. And to the point, he even told me one time, says, you know, if some gay guy made a pass at me, I would actually knock him out. And I'm looking at him and said, why? Why?
Why wouldn't you be kind of embarrassingly flat? I'm not gay, so I'd be embarrassingly flat. It's kind
of
flattering,
right? Because, you know, women will find you attractive, and this guy finds you attractive too. But hey, that's a compliment.
That's a compliment. Just a compliment. That's right. I mean,
it doesn't mean right away because the guy finds me attractive, we're just going to, hey, let's go to the back of my car right away.
Have these people never, like, they...
Well, it's in the Bible, so it has to be obeyed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's right. The interpretation of what's in the Bible has to be obeyed, and it just I don't know. It's getting worse. I mean, it's 2017, and we're still in the dark and Middle Ages when it comes to dealing with people
sexuality, gender issues,
and unfortunately, birth control and abortion in the States as well.
Well, hopefully, it's getting better. Well, thank you guys for your opinion, and now we'll take a break, and we'll be back with Dr. Del Rey. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm the Supreme Irreverend Dr. Randy Tyson from the Legion of Reason Diversion. Join me and my co-hosts, Christine Shelska, Twyla, and Nate Phelps, as we explore issues at the intersection of atheism, humanism, and skepticism. Topics range from alternative medicine to the interference of religion in public policy. We often have special guests to help us understand the topic du jour. Previous guests include biologist Jerry Coyne, ex-Muslim author Ali Rizvi, philosopher Peter Boghossian, and the late physicist Victor Stanger. You can watch us on the Legion of Reason YouTube channel or subscribe to the audio version through your favorite podcatcher such as iTunes or Stitcher. And don't forget to like the Legion of Reason Facebook page.
Now it's time for an AtheistAudiobooks.com sneak preview.
The happy atheist disproving Christianity after faith, constitution, in God, baptized atheist, the God virus.
Here is an excerpt from The Child Catchers, Rescue, Trafficking, and the New Gospel of Adoption by Catherine Joyce.
That's when the pressure turned ugly. The musics sat her down, Rianne said, and asked her what her plan to parent was. In a letter she wrote later, she listed the arguments the musics made. That placing your child for adoption was biblical, so God would bless me abundantly for my decision. That I had too much potential to be a single mother, and God had big plans for me. That they had to hold me to what I said when I first moved in. And finally, that it shows you care more for your child when you place them for adoption. Rianne didn't know that consent documents for adoption are not legally binding in Washington State until after birth. Everything was screaming at me to keep my child, Rianne said. Rianne wrote the Butler's pastor to request that he help mediate some agreement with the family. The social worker called the Butlers and returned to Rianne with a message. They didn't want an open adoption or to send any photos, but they said to tell you, thank you for the gift.
The Child Catchers, now available at atheistaudiobooks.com.
I've heard people say that.
And we're back. Now, this music can only mean one thing, is if we have with us the host of Secular Sexuality, the man, the psychologist of sexuality, our friend, Dr. Del Rey. Dr. Rey, how you doing, sir?
Well, I'm great. Hey, Barry White.
Is that perfect?
That's perfect. back when they selected the music to intro, they said this is the closest to Barry White we could get. So okay. You great minds think alike. You didn't know that, did you?
No. Dr. Ray, welcome to the Valley. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Now, Doctor, this is not your first time on the show, but we always have some new listeners. So if you'd be so kind, will you please give us the Reader's Digest of who Del Rey is?
Gosh, okay. I'm the president of and founder of Recovering from Religion, which I guess we'll talk about another time. I'm going to talk a little bit about it today, maybe. And I'm the author of The God Virus, one of the best-selling books on that topic, and the author of Sex and God, the only book on that topic. Nobody yet has written another book about how religion screws up your sex life.
Really? I'm surprised.
Yeah, no. Isn't that interesting? You would think that would be an obvious thing to write about, but nobody's ever done that.
Wow.
I also host my own podcast, The Secular Sexuality, where we talk about all things that you cannot listen to if you're under 18. And it's a very interesting podcast. I think so, anyway.
It absolutely is. I listen to it, and I highly recommend it. I also have both your books, and you were kind enough to grant us an interview in the past. And even one of our ex-co-hosts, Karen, we met Del Rey at the Imagine No Religion 4 at the time, and he actually gave her a vibrator. So.
Awesome. Oh, right, yeah. Now, did I autograph it? That's the question.
Yes, you did. You did, too. So that's the great thing about Dr.
There's
Ray.
There's only like three women on the planet that have an autographed vibrator from me, so those things should be worth a lot of money by now. Unless, of course, they've been used. Then I'm not sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, she could have framed it and put it on the wall. We don't know.
We don't know. We'll never know.
There is a woman in North Carolina that did frame it and did put it on her wall. Isn't that hilarious? I said, haven't you used it? She said, no, I framed it, put on my wall. I want to remember that. I don't want to use it.
Now, that's a conversation piece right there.
You want to keep the autograph on it. You know, once you use it, there goes the autograph.
Yeah, that was crazy funny. Yeah.
Dr. Ray, you know, we'll be talking about recovering from religion a bit later on, but one of the topics we wanted to discuss today was hypnotism in church. And this is something you've written about quite extensively and done some lectures about it. Would you be so kind to illuminate us about this?
Well, yeah, I actually devoted a whole chapter in my book, The God Virus, to that, because I noticed early on ministers, if you go on television, for example, or YouTube or something, and just watch one of these evangelical ministers preaching. And then you ask yourself, if you saw somebody standing out on the street talking like that, would you think they were crazy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you probably would. They repeat themselves 4 and 5 times. They talk in cadences like this, and they emphasize things that don't seem to need to be emphasized, and they tend to talk about the same rate as you breathe. I mean, I'm doing it as we speak right here, right?
You got me hypnotized.
I actually was talking
Scott,
a little
Scott, put
faster.
Your pants back on. Put your pants back on, Scott. What are you doing?
Yeah, right. I never understood that. It seemed weird to me. I did grow up in a church that didn't use that method as much. But whenever we had, about once a year, a revivalist would come in. And the revivalist preacher would preach like that, even though our local preacher didn't preach as well like that. What I quickly learned was preachers who use that technique are usually pretty darn successful. And preachers who don't use that technique are not very successful. I just was in Texas a few weeks ago speaking down in Corpus Christi and had the opportunity to talk to a minister, a former minister. He was a Baptist minister for like 20 years or more, and he got outed. He was an atheist in the pulpit.
Yes!
And he said he refused to use that hypnotic technique. As a result, he never could grow his church very big. And yet down the street, a similar church to his would be 10 times bigger than his, and the minister would be using them. So I noticed that. Then when I went on, I got my master's degree in religion, thinking I would be a minister, after 2 years of that, I realized it was all bullshit and decided I didn't want to go that direction. So I went into psychology. And in the course of my psychological training over the next 5 or 6 years, I got a lot of training in hypnosis. And one day it dawned on me, what they're teaching me in this class about hypnosis is almost the same thing as that preacher's doing down the road there. Of course, YouTube didn't exist back then, and you couldn't just go online, but you could turn the television on, and you could see an evangelical or crazy Pentecostal minister preaching. And I studied that for a little while. I realized these are the same techniques, and those ministers did not go to my hypnosis school. How did they learn that shit? And so I started talking to some ministers and listened to them. And so is this where you wanted to go, Kevin?
Yeah, absolutely. Keep going. Okay.
Because I can talk all day about this stuff.
That's why you're here.
Have fun.
Has Scott put his pants back on yet?
Yes.
Yeah, we had to force him.
He's got one leg in so far.
Guys are mean.
So that was really fascinating that we had ministers using these techniques. And then when I started talking to them, listening to them, asking how they got trained, they basically told me that they taught us how to do this in Bible college. Of course, almost all the ministers that were in my particular denomination went to a Bible college, as did all the Baptists around us and the Pentecostals, the Nazarenes. Most of those colleges were not accredited. You got a degree from them, but the degree wasn't worth anything in the secular world, as these, unfortunately, ministers leaving the pulpit have now found out.
Mm-hmm.
So what I found out was they were mimicking people like Billy Sunday or Billy Graham. You know, Billy Sunday was like the mentor for Billy Graham. Well, many of us have heard Billy Graham preach at some point in our life, and we see he uses the same cadence, those cadences and the repetitions and the reading things that you practically already got memorized because you've heard him so many times from the pulpit. Then I came across a book some years ago. Fascinating book. I would actually recommend it to anyone, any of your listeners that are interested in this subject. It was called The Battle of the Mind. Mm-hmm. And it was by an Englishman named William Sargent. And he spells his name funny, S-A-G-E-N-T or something like that. It wasn't quite the same as you would spell, you know, a captain or a sergeant name. I don't remember right now. Oh, wow. After I read that book, he was a British intelligence officer during World War II. And then after he got out of the British, whatever he was doing there, he joined like MI6 or whatever the equivalent to CIA was in the British government. And then the CIA got a hold of him and said, why don't you come over to the United States and we'll pay you to research some stuff. Because at that time, in this late 40s, early 50s, the United States was dealing with pilots or soldiers who had been, and then, of course, tortured or whatever. And then they would get on movies or on video or whatever back then and confess their crimes against communism and how they now have seen the light. And the U.S. government, the CIA, wanted to know how they were able to take well-prepared people and turn them around to say things you know darn good and well they didn't believe. And that was what William Sargent was doing. And he investigated all this. And Kevin, you will not be surprised at this, maybe. Were any of you raised in the Methodist Church?
No.
No, I was raised Catholic.
Balanced. No, I was Jewish and missed all of this good stuff.
Well, lucky you. I wish the rest of us could say that. Yeah, except, of course, if you're raised Hasidic Jew or Orthodox Jew.
No, I just reform.
No, okay.
Well, that was really lucky of you.
Yeah.
We have this running gag here on the show that Nancy is actually the wandering Jew that's been cursed by Jesus to live forever until he comes back.
Well, she has escaped the torture of Protestantism and Catholicism, of course. So what William Sargent did some interesting research on Charles and John Wesley. And this begins his book. If you read this book, Battle of the Mind, you will see that he starts out trying to understand how brainwashing works. Of course, that's where the term brainwashing came from, was in that time frame between the Korean War and into the Vietnam War. So by 1959, he'd figured it out. He published this book. Now, if you read the book, you'll realize he's a psychiatrist. He was trained in those early days of psychiatry, so he uses some old terminology. But the concepts he is showing are phenomenal, really, really interesting stuff. And what he shows was John Wesley could stand up in front of 1,000 people in a tent meeting in England and pretty much hypnotize them, put them into an altered state of consciousness. So they would be literally rolling in the aisles and crying and all this stuff that he was able to do. And he could do this over and over again to thousands of people at the same time. Now, that is really amazing. Until you realize that other people have been doing this for a long time. I believe it's Charles Mesmer. This is where we get the notion of mesmerizing. Mm-hmm. He's kind of the inventor of what we now know of as hypnosis. He kind of created the basic technology for that way back in the late 1700s. But the Wesleys were doing it even earlier than that, and they had no training in this stuff. Somehow, John Wesley had come upon the technique of preaching that really it uses ritual, it uses repetition, it uses speaking at roughly the rate of breathing. And sooner or later, you can just put people into an altered state of consciousness where they will start doing things they have never dreamed they would do or could do. And that's what I saw when I looked at Bill Graham could get hundreds of people to come down and confess and get baptized or whatever Billy did at those gigantic meetings. He could get hundreds of thousands of people crying. Now, so that just tells me that Billy Graham, taking his cue from Billy Sunday, who did the same thing earlier, taking their cue from Charles John Wesley, even 200 years earlier, we have kind of a pedigree. We could take this stuff way, 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 way back. These techniques have been available to the religious, especially Protestant religion, for centuries, for at least 2 centuries, maybe 2.5 centuries.
I guess it's.
I think that's fascinating, don't you?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. And we could probably even go further in the past when you think of ancient shamanism and using not just the rhythm of the voice, but also visual cues. You know, the smoke and you know the decor.
Right.
Is it still reproduced in churches today?
Yeah. Right. If you think about what the Catholic Church does, they use rituals, they use rhythms, they use music, they use incense, and all those things can do the same thing that Charles and John Wesley did. And those are actually much more ancient. Those go back to pagan rituals. Pagans knew what they were doing. If you read about Crazy Horse, for example, in the mid to late 1800s, and the rituals that were going on around, Sundance, the Sundance. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the film festival. I'm talking about the Native American rituals around the Sundance. The Sundance put people into a trance state. They could literally stay in this trance state for 2 or 3 days.
Wow.
They could be put into amazingly torturous things. You've seen movies probably of it, of men getting their skin pierced in dozens and dozens of places and even hung up with rope and hung that way.
Yes, yes.
And they do this voluntarily. That because pain can be transferred into or somehow the trance state can allow for an incredible amount of pain endurance. And of course, the men, Crazy Horse himself, went through this process at one point in time. And this allowed them to show that they were worthy and ready to go into battle and to fight for other tribes or fight the white men in this case.
Well, Dr. Ray, do you need 2 things to happen at the same time? Do you need someone who speaks in that cadence? And then do you also need the emotional transfer or frenzy that occurs when people become emotional and their neighbors feel that same vibration? Is it necessary for both of those things to happen?
Well, it's a social contagion. I think that's what
social contagion. There you go.
It's like it spreads. And while there was no preacher there in front of Crazy Horse or the Lakota tribe, they were dancing. And they would dance and dance and dance for hours, even dance for days without sleep. Sleep deprivation is another really good way to put somebody into an altered state of consciousness. And, of course, we know that for centuries, monks have done that, you know, going without sleep for days. And then they would have a vision and find God and all that sort of stuff. People like Sister Teresa and all. Mother Teresa. If you look just at the history of religious ritual indoctrination, you will find a lot of sleep deprivation and starvation, fasting. Fasting is really important in putting people into altered states of consciousness. If you read the history of monks and hermits and recluses back in the 400s, 500s, 600s, you'll see that sleep deprivation and starvation were ways to get the... What happens is the brain, in its desperation to get nutrients, starts doing strange things. And those strange things lead to connections in the brain that probably don't normally happen because the brain's just trying to get nutrients. And then, of course, when you come out of that trance, you take some water, when you take some food, you then report to all your peers around you, wow, I had this amazing vision of what, you know, what God wants me to do or what the spirit world wants me to do if you're in the Lakota Indian tribes. Now, the reason I'm telling you all this is because all these techniques have been used throughout history to put people into altered states of consciousness so that the powers that be within a given religion or cult can then infect you with notions about the afterlife, about demons in this life, about other ways of thinking about the world that have nothing to do with reality. And then once they've got you infected, it's really, really hard to get that out of people's minds. For example, fear of hell. John Wesley could get you scared shitless of going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you've got that fear in you, you've been hypnotized. And see, during hypnosis, you can create panic, you can create fear, you can create joy, you can create a euphoria. The person that's leading the induction, so to speak, can create a lot of different emotional states, not unlike what you might experience if you were on LSD or mushrooms or something like that. You could experience things. But the person is guiding you in this case, and maybe they've made you go without food for 3 days or dance for 3 days or whatever. By the end of that, you are pretty receptive to almost any message. Now, in the late 1800s and 1890s, there was an entire movement in North American Indians called the Ghost Dance, and the Ghost Dance was one final religiously motivated effort to overthrow the oppressors, white culture. And these ghost dances would go on for days. The people would receive their visions. And one of the things they were convinced of was, as a result of their devotion to whatever the spiritual world was and their ancestors, or what, you know, whatever that was, they were now invincible to bullets. So you can imagine how that ended. Against U.S. soldiers with Gatling guns, what we now know as machine guns. And so the rebellious tribes on the reservation would go out and fight, and of course they would die. But they went into this thinking they were immune to bullets.
There's no fear.
Somebody gave them that through hypnotic trance induction. Normal people don't think they're immune to bullets.
Yes. Wow. That's, wow.
Wow. Was this what you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm shocked to see this. So am I correct to, if I was to put this in a summary, am I correct to say that They're using rhythm in a communal setting to evoke an emotional reaction, which kind of builds a, not a an addiction, but sort of, right? That that tells your brain this is why people are hooked on to the church and hooked on to community in the church, because of the emotional attachment they have to that hypnotism, I guess.
Right. It's actually a sequence. I write about the sequence in my book, The God Virus. It's I won't say it's sophisticated, but it is brilliant. If you put when I was being taught hypnosis, we were doing it to try and help people heal, or you know, get new ways of thinking about their. About their lives and stuff. We weren't there to put insidious ideas in their brain. And when I was taught when I was going through training that we would spend a session or two or three just trying to understand what is it that that the patient, the client wants to do. Where do they want to go? How do we help them get over their addiction, for example? When I was trying to write my second book. I've actually written four books, but most people, your listeners, don't know about the first two because they were written about organizational psychology. And you're not too interested in that probably if you're listening to this podcast. But I knew I'd written a first book. It was a bestseller. Teaming up with McGraw-Hill published the book. And I knew that I could write a second book about this topic with a, you know, a wider audience. And I just couldn't get over my writer's block. I knew I had a book. So I went to my therapist, who I was also a very good hypnotist, and I told her, here's what I want to do. She spent a couple sessions outlining in very great detail what I was trying to accomplish. And then we did a couple of hypnotic sessions together. I went home and I wrote the book. 6 months later, it was at the publisher's.
Wow.
I mean, record time. Kind of. When I start writing books, they get written really fast. But it may take me 5 years to get ready to write one. And that's kind of where it was here. So I'm just telling you, that's the power of a really good, a well-trained hypnotist tries to understand what the client wants to do and then uses hypnotism or an altered state to help them get through their blocks. Mm-hmm. When that block may be quitting smoking or writing a book. It doesn't matter. Well, the minister doesn't do that. They don't really give a shit what you want. What they're doing is taking, putting you to an altered state of consciousness to convince you to do what they want.
Yeah.
Now, that is very difficult to do. People don't usually change their minds about important stuff unless there's something else going on there. So if what Charles Wesley would do was he would get people in a frenzy about the fires of hell, fear of hell. So if I can put you in an altered state of consciousness and I can make you convinced that the fires of hell are lapping at your feet as we speak right now, you're going to have a visceral brain response that goes through your amygdala and just kind of puts fire waves throughout your whole brain that says, we are in imminent danger. Now, that's the way the brain is responding to the imagery. And now I can put into your head, unless you come forward and confess your sins and take Jesus as your Savior, you are going to hell.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but now here that, but the sequence is really, really important. You got to get people super, super afraid. You've got to get them in that total fear. Flames are licking at your feet right now, and they can literally feel the heat from the flames, so to speak. They go forward. The minister puts his hand on their head. Do you take Jesus for your Savior? And, oh, yes, 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 I do. What happens next?
They ask for money?
Well, they're going to do that, yeah, shortly. But what happens immediately after they have gotten their blessing, their forgiveness from the priest or the minister?
They have euphoria.
They're relieved.
Yeah, they're relieved.
Exactly, exactly. It is euphoria. They are relieved from the fires of hell. They no longer feel the heat. And this oxytocin or dopamine or, you know, some kind of chemical just floods the brain. And they feel this amazing, wow, It is better than an orgasm. Not sure about that, obviously, but
sounds good on the radio, though.
But if you look, if you just look, if you can see it in movies or in documentaries or something or on TV, look at how these people are responding. It looks like they're having an orgasm. It really does. So you get that kind of relief. You want to come back for that relief because you're going to go home, and in a few days, you're going to start remembering the devil's watching you. Jesus may not forgive you if you do this or that. Of course, you're going to masturbate, and then you're going to feel guilty, and or you're going to have sex with somebody you shouldn't have sex with. Now you got to go back, and you crave that emotional release of forgiveness.
Well,
all created by that sequence I just described.
Having been to a number of Pentecostal meetings and evangelistic meetings, I can really relate to how powerful that kind of message is. You can feel, there's a palpable feeling of what's happening to those around you who are being affected. It's like a shockwave going through, and it's an interesting experience because I began to feel some of that excitement, and I realized it was false, and my brain and my emotions were playing tricks on me, so I could pull myself back. But to be right in the belly of the beast and feel it, I can certainly understand how it happens and how vulnerable people are to go through that experience over and over.
Yep, that's exactly right. That's a great experiment to do. A committed atheist goes to a Pentecostal church or a Baptist church or whatever, and even you are susceptible to that kind of programming.
Oh, absolutely. The excitement that other people are feeling, and then as they begin to break down, and especially in the Pentecostal meetings, as they begin to talk in tongues and raise their arms toward the ceiling, that social contagion that you were speaking about is all around you. And it really is interesting, you know, when you say, well, this isn't cool, I'm not going to feel this, I'm immune, and you find yourself getting into it a little bit. It's a lesson, you know, that I think is valuable for all of us to understand.
That exact incident is what drove me from ever going to church again.
I think you can also take a look at when October comes around and you have Halloween. They have those in the States. It's not something we see here in Canada yet, but in the States they have hell houses.
Yes.
And that's exactly what Dr. DeBray is describing right now.
Here.
You just scare the kids, pardon my French, you just scare them shitless, and then have a call to altar, right?
Yeah.
That angers me. That really angers me.
It's a form of child abuse.
Absolutely.
Well, when I saw it, it scared the hell out of me because I was sitting in a pew on I don't know if you've ever heard of this, Dr. Ray, the Alpha Course.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes. I was in the Alpha Course when I was in my 20s. Uh-huh. And
You might want to describe what the Alpha Course is.
The Alpha Course is for young Christian men.
Okay.
I'm not even sure how to explain it now. But so I was sitting listening to this non-denominational minister up front, and there was a group of people in this church, and they started with the talking in tongues bit. And all of a sudden, the next thing I know, everyone's up at the front of the church and they're writhing and their arms are above their heads and they're starting to Google and talk and lay on the floor. And I looked at a guy beside me in the pew and I said, we were the only ones still sitting there. And I went, do you smoke? He says, yeah. I said, let's go out for a smoke. I didn't smoke, but that was it. We didn't go back in. We were done, right? That was...
Well, Dr. Ray, now that we know how this actually works... maybe our audience would like to also know, how do you pull somebody out of it? Or can you?
Wow. That's a tough question, Kevin. That's a real tough question. Let me just back up here. I just want to tell one more story. I was in about 2011, I think. I was at the American Atheist Convention. I was giving a talk there on my book, The God Virus. But one of the other speakers was Dr. Andy Thompson, who wrote a good little book, little tiny book, and probably not 100 pages, called Why We Believe in Gods. A really well really good book. I recommend it. Second best book ever written on the subject, by the way. you're gonna guess what the first book, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Plug. Voice for Daryl.
Dr. Thompson has really got a nice, a good angle on it. Different angle than what I took in the God Virus. But he's up there talking and giving his talk to six. There were 600 atheists. Now, this is American Atheist Convention, right? 600 people in there. And he says, well, let me just demonstrate how this works. And he starts getting us to, he has everybody lock arms. So we just put our arms through each other's arms. He said, now we're going to sing a song. And he starts singing Amazing Grace. He said, well, just rock to the sound of this. He gave us several other instructions. I'm not going to go into great detail. But the instructions were to help you get a feel for the emotional impact of this. Now, you got 600 atheists singing Amazing Grace, locking arms and rocking. I'm telling you, after about 2 minutes of that, we were feeling the spirit. It was really weird. All of us, I dare say every person in that room knew what was going on. Nobody was being fooled by it. And yet, we felt it. He had us, well, I don't want to go through the details. It's not really relevant here tonight, but... So if you can get even atheists, that tells you how powerful these techniques are. That's just what I'm trying
scary
to...
Scary.
No, I was just going to ask, is this why a lot of people will say that since this is an emotional response, a lot of atheists will say you can't reason somebody out of an emotional response?
Right, exactly, yeah. Well, I think there's several components to this, and I don't think there's an easy answer to your question. I do think that a large segment of the population, probably 30% of the population, are very susceptible to these kinds of rituals and are more easily inducted into altered states of consciousness, maybe even higher. It could be as high as 50%. So when you think about it, some people just get addicted to that stuff. They get hooked on it and they need their weekly fix. Logic has absolutely nothing to do with it. When I go to church, the end of church, I feel good. I feel the spirit. I feel God is in my heart. Well, where's the logic there? You don't need logic. You went home feeling good. You went home and, you know, you came home from work, you took a drink of, took a drink of beer and you felt good. Mm-hmm. It's that feeling good that people are after.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you don't get people out of that very easily.
Wow. Okay, perfect. Well, thank you, Doctor, for that very educational lesson on the hypnotism in church. But we also promise that we give you a little bit of time to talk about recovery from religion.
So okay,
give great us the news, Doc.
Thanks. Well, we are announcing just this week, literally June 1st, that we have expanded our hotline and helpline. We're now calling it the helpline because it includes a lot of other stuff. And we are expanding that dramatically so that we are more capable of serving more people. If they want to call in or they want to chat in with us, we have far more trained volunteers than we've had in the past. We've got more hours of operation. So if you're a person dealing with recovering from religion issues, you can call us. You can chat in with us. We've got hundreds of resources we can refer you to. We can help you find a group locally. It's just lots of things going on. We've been in this business. I started recovering from religion in 2009, and we have grown dramatically. And this last year, we upgraded our software, our online presence, a lot of the stuff that we're able to do, our training. So we're really able to help a lot more people.
No.
We've also got other resources like our podcast, that Recovered from Religion podcast, that's got story after story after story of people leaving religion, as well as some cool interviews with people like Dale McGowan or David McAfee and people like that. And we've got a blog that talks about how do you recover and has lots and lots of stories on that too. But we can come back and talk about that more extensively at another time.
Absolutely.
Like.
I certainly want to. I was wondering, is your hotline, is it just U.S.-centric, or is this reach all over Canada as well?
Well, that was the interesting thing. It used to be U.S.-centric.
Oh.
That we're trying to get away from that. So we have opened it up. Right now, you could chat from anywhere on the planet with our volunteers.
Fantastic.
We are actually getting far too many chats from the Middle East.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's kind of interesting. Chats from the Middle East.
Wow.
Ex-Muslims who have no one to talk to, and we're the only people.
Must be hard to find people that can actually...
Like I said, there's lots of groups that'll get you into religion. We're one of the only ones that'll help you get out.
Must be hard to find some people that can actually converse with these... Middle Eastern, the U.S. and Canada is not full of ex-Muslims, right. I would say.
If a listener is an ex-Muslim and you want to help us talk to other people trying to leave Islam, get in touch. Go to the recoveringfromreligion.org website, click the volunteer button, and we'll help you do the rest.
Recoveringfromreligion.org.
Right, recoveringfromreligion.org. And if you're looking for help, you can chat in with us, or you can call our phone line, 1-844-I-DOUBT-IT.
1-844-I-DOUBT-IT.
Uh-huh, right.
I doubt it. Perfect. Thank you so much, Dr. Ray. It's always a pleasure having you on board. And if people want to reach you, where can they find you?
Besides, they can find me on Twitter at Dr. D. Ray 132. They can find me on Facebook, although I'm at my 5,000 friend limit, so they can follow me on Facebook, and they'll see a lot of my stuff on Facebook.
Fantastic.
Godvirus.net is another place to look me up.
Sure, you come. You haven't even left us, and I'm already looking forward to your coming back. That's how popular you are with us. We love you, Dr. Ray. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, thanks for having me on today,
Dr. Ray. Before
you guys are doing too. You're helping the world. I like that.
We're right? trying in our little way. We're trying, Dr. Yeah. Ray. Before I let you go, can I get you to say hi? I'm Dr. Del Ray, and I took a left at the valley.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ray, and I took a left at the valley.
And that was Dr. Del Ray.
Oh, that was fascinating, was what that was.
Our favorite psychologist.
Awesome. Yeah.
Oh, I love the man.
Absolutely.
He's such a hoot. And, of course, he's one of the high priests of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Is he really?
He is.
Oh, wow.
He's such a hoot. I just love, every time Daryl's down here, I just have a blast with him. He's fantastic. A lot of good lessons here today.
Yeah.
A lot of good information.
Absolutely. I mean, we're vulnerable to a lot of things that are in our unconscious and our subconscious that we never realize until all of a sudden we're hit with the double whammy of it. So it's good to know the techniques behind it.
Now, I just want to go to a Pentecostal meeting now and just take some notes.
Oh,
no.
We should do that experiment.
Scary.
Yeah,
it's
you really.
Scary.
I know, but it'd be scary, but I would just laugh my head off, so I might not come out of there alive.
Well, I don't know how. I don't know whether you get out of their buddy bloodied and without being bruised. Bloodied and bruised, but
yeah,
I'm a big guy, I can take care of myself.
Your psyche might be damaged too.
Well, you guys might have to join me and show me some support.
Man.
Well, it's a
show in itself.
It's a fascinating
We could wear colanders. We'll wear colanders and just say that we're representatives from
an interfaith meeting.
Well, it's entirely different than watching a televangelist on television when you're in that audience with one of the world-renowned televangelists. It really is. It's an experience. It's a roller coaster.
Fantastic.
It really is.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. You can follow us on leftofthevalley.com. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, at LETV Podcast. Send us an email at leftatvalley@outlook.com. Coming up, we'll have Jerry DeWitt, speaking of hypnotism in church. Jerry DeWitt, the first man who actually went through the clergy project. He was a pastor, and now he's a secular. We'll have him. And our friend Eli Bosnick will come back, and he has a surprise for us. We're working on this. This should be great. And we'll also be doing somewhere our top 10 of best moments of this day in history.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward. Oh, wait a minute. I do that.
You'll
you better
be
have it ready.
Wait a minute. It sounded so good till I realized.
Thank you so much, guys. Until next time. Surrounded by damn aliens. As long as there's a breath in my body, you can bet your last dollar I'll be working hard. Fight.
fighting this problem. Religion is a disease. It comes from culture. Only true on a regional scale. Science is universal. Or you could say that Horus isn't real, but Jesus is. Or Zeus, Thor, Mithra, Vishnu. You don't believe in them. I think the reason is apparent. You do what you're told and believe in the God assigned by your parents. I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen. I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance and you just call it faith and unsubstantiated claims. That's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist.
Atheist, atheist,
aye. I'm an atheist.
Atheist, atheist.
Now let me take a sec, don't mean to sound so hateful, but I swear to God, pun intended, I find it disgraceful that thousands of children are raped by priests, and since they're holy men of God, they get away scot-free. And the Pope does his very best to keep it on the hush, don't wanna affect business, he loves money too much. We know that they love the kids, but how the fuck can we protect them while they planning to molest them? We teaching them to respect them.
Respect them? Fuck that.
The system is broke down, working backwards, and the only action or tactic I plan to practice now is to attack them. The parties of God's hands are bloodstained, millions of murders by believers, and they're all in God's name. And let me take a sec, don't mean to sound so hateful, but I swear to God, pun intended, I find it disgraceful that many atheists are told to be quiet. You're not alone, speak your mind, time to let it be known. I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen. I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance and you just call it faith and unsubstantiated claims. That's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist.
Atheist, atheist.